I remember so hearing a song and going, "Oh, that's amazing! I've got to listen to a lot more of that." But when I started dating my wife, I went through the CDs in her car, and it was like Bruce Springsteen's Greatest Hits. So I put that on, and that was like the start of actually seriously listening to him and spending some time listening to him. Not simply because my wife didn't have much good music in her car.
Of course
But
not. We're
yeah, I
yeah.
do. It was just like, honestly, you spend a few road trips listening to that on repeat and it gets into your head, doesn't it? And I was like, yeah, gotta just do some more of listening to this. And we were young, and yeah, I tried to spend as much time with her dancing in the dark as I could.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Set Listing Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. We are getting off the Springsteen wagon, though we are staying on the wagon with my good friend, Duncan. Duncan had me on his podcast. We had a great time. And at the end, I said, "Hey, you want to return the favor and join me?" And he was nice enough to say yes. So, Duncan, welcome to Set Listing, Bruce.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to it. It's gonna be epic.
Yeah, there we go. Tell us a little about yourself.
My name's Duncan Baskeran Brown. I live in Oxford, in the United Kingdom. I like a lot of different types of music, but there's a special place in my heart for Bruce. I suppose what I do all day is, some people think that I help people to stop drinking, but that isn't really it. What I do is I help people to start living.
Yeah, and so talk about, we're going to get to your podcast, but just for now, tell us the name of the podcast, remind people.
It's called Flat Pack Sober because I've got a bit of an IKEA sobriety thing going on.
Yes, very nice. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but I always like to start at the beginning. So talk about, where did you grow up and what kind of music were your family listening to when you were younger?
So I live just outside Oxford, but I always say Oxford because people think you're dead clever if you come from Oxford.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah. So what music did I listen to when I was a kid? I listened to the obligatory embarrassing pop that was playing at the time. I was a big fan of Tears for Fears, if you remember them. I listened to some Michael Jackson, and luckily enough, I remember when Bad came out, so I just about caught the earlier stuff that was quite good and got out of the Michael Jackson thing before it got a bit too Earth Song and all like rubbish and stuff like that. But in terms of like my family influence, my mother has, how shall I put it, stunted musical acumen.
Okay.
And my dad's okay, but he's very into classical music and jazz, and I have learned to appreciate those, but at the time, not so much. So they were a bit of a write-off, really. Though I got so lucky. One of my treasured childhood memories is discovering at my mum's father's house a big box of vinyl records.
Okay.
And they belonged to my aunt. Don't know why she didn't take them off with her, but there was a lot of Elvis and there was a lot of the Beach Boys. So I spent a lot of summer afternoons, because we spent a lot of time at my grandfather's during the summer holidays when I was growing up. I spent a lot of those times listening to Elvis and the Beach Boys.
By the way, the Beach Boys were my first musical obsession. 77, I was just graduated from high school and bought a 8-track of Endless Summer and fell in love with Brian Wilson and his music. So that's that, you are speaking my language. And of course, I think if you're a certain age, you always love Elvis movies, no matter how bad they are. and we've done our trip to Graceland and seen there is that. When, as you're finding your own music, talk to me a little bit about that. So was it with friends? Was it with, I understand radio's different in the UK than it is in the US. I had someone talking about pirate radio just a few weeks ago. So talk about how you were discovering pop and rock and everything else you were enjoying.
Yeah, so I did listen to Radio One, which was the big BBC pop music station, still is thing.
Yeah.
And I did the listening to the charts and taping all the music off the radio.
Absolutely. And right.
You had to press pause on the record when the DJ was talking and start again when the next track came on. All of that sort of stuff. So yeah, I enjoyed that. But I think I really discovered my own music by spending time with friends and listening to their music, didn't I?
Sure.
So I had a few friends when I got a bit cooler and I'd got a bit older and I'd started the kind of the equivalent of high school, that sort of thing. I had a few friends and we started listening to The Doors and The Beatles and a little bit of The Rolling Stones and things like that. And it was just when grunge was coming along. So Nirvana were very big, listening to music like that and getting more into kind of serious music.
Yeah. So you mentioned loving Bruce. Can you remember when you first discovered him and what about his music spoke to you?
There wasn't a specific moment when I remember hearing a song and going, oh, it's amazing. I've got to listen to a lot more of that. But when I started dating my wife, I went through the CDs in her car and it was like Bruce Springsteen's greatest hits. So I put that on and that was like the start of actually seriously listening to him and spending some time listening to him. Not simply because my wife didn't have much good music in her car.
Of course not.
It was just like, honestly, you spend a few road trips listening to that on repeat and it gets into your head, doesn't it? And I was like, got to just do some more of listening to this. And we were young and I tried to spend as much time with her dancing in the dark as I could.
There you go. Nicely said, my friend. Nicely said. I'm going to shift gears because we are going to spend some time talking about music, but I want you to share your journey because you share this on your podcast. So I want to talk about your sobriety and your journey to a better health and a better life, as you said. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when I was struggling to find my own musical taste, I think that was part of a bigger attempt to fit in and find my place in life. And I didn't get on particularly well at school. They expected me to behave in one way. And I felt quite strongly that I should behave in another way. And invariably those two things clashed. And I found it difficult growing up, just not in a kind of like very traumatic, broken home kind of a way, just I found it very difficult to fit in and find my place and work out where I was. So I turned to the kind of ways of easing my discomfort that were open to me as a 9-year-old, which mostly revolved around chocolate and chips and cookies and things like that. So I developed what, looking back, I now see is quite an unhealthy relationship with food quite early on. And then when I got more into the kind of grungy stage of life, I developed quite a unhealthy relationship with alcohol. And it was a bigger hammer for that particular nail, wasn't it? And it did start off very socially. I would drink at the weekends with my friends, listening to some music, and it seemed to be quite a social thing to start off with. But as time progressed, the amount of people I was drinking with went down, and the amount of drinking I was doing went up, until it got to the point when I was pretty much sat on my own at home, drinking quite heavily, and got to the point where I realized that something needed to change. And it wasn't even as specific as thinking, right, I need to drink less. I just knew that I needed to change. And I went through a process. I stopped smoking, then I stopped drinking, then I sorted my diet out. And I don't want your listeners to think that I'm some kind of like behavior change superhero and I did that in a day or a week or even a month. That was a process that took me about 5 years.
Was there a road to Damascus moment where you went and my brother, who we discussed on your podcast that died about a year ago, was many years in recovery and was very active in AA. And when he tells his story that he woke up one morning and he had messed his pants. He had vomit in his mouth. There was blood on his nose. And he goes, oh, I must have drank too much last night. And not, oh my God, shocking, just, oh, yeah. The same way. Oh, yeah. I slept wrong on my shoulder, that feeling. And that was when one of the things that said, if that's become normal for me, perhaps my behavior is not going where it should be. So did you have that kind of moment?
Unfortunately, I've never been to Damascus. So I didn't have that moment. I did. I had a few realizations driving towards Boreham Wood, but that's an entirely different story. No, see, the thing was, it never quite came to that head. It was for me, it was much more kind of a longer process. And I like to tell the story that way. I don't like to say there was this one moment where I like suddenly realized I needed to change, because actually for me, it was about a lot of different steps and it was about putting one foot in front of the other. And it seems a bit strange to say that one step was necessarily more important than the other. In terms of drinking, it came to a head when my wife and I, we were trying to start a family and she got pregnant, and we got that kind of exciting feeling that you get when, you know, newly pregnant, like fear, but excitement, and it builds and it builds. And then she had a miscarriage and it all came crashing down, and it was a very dark place. It was very hard for her, and it was made even harder by the fact that I wasn't really there for her. I didn't know how to help her or how to support her or how to hold the space for her. All I really knew how to do was drink. I just did what I did whenever things got difficult, whenever things got painful, which was just retreat into myself with a bottle of wine. And it never actually happened. I never stood in front of the mirror at 4 a.m. saying to myself in such stark terms, but looking back, it became evident that I had to make a decision. I had to decide whether what I wanted from life was another drink or whether what I wanted from life was a family. You'll be pleased to know I made the right decision.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I love is the idea that not every story is one filled with excessive drama, right? This was just a matter of you, and I'm not belittling it because I'm sure it was a hard journey, but just the idea of you decided, as you just said, I have a choice and I'm going to make that choice. And the cliche, right? The journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. And that just really is what it is.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things KISS. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycom order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
So with this journey, what led you to start sharing your story and to do a podcast about it?
If I was being slightly unfair to myself, I would say I share my story because I am a massive show-off.
That's why I do a podcast, Duncan. My wife tells me all the time, you've got an ego, Jesse. You don't think you do. And when she pushes it that way, yes, why else would I be? Her favorite line was when I first was going to do a podcast, why would anyone listen to you? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm just glad they do. So yes, continue, Duncan.
Yeah, so with that obvious caveat, that speaks to part of the reason why I do what I do. Even before I got sober, I was attracted to communication. I've always been a writer. I've always been a performer. I've always been a speaker. I've always wanted to help people to change their lives. So I was in education, training, coaching before I started drinking. So when I stopped, I did have one of those kind of like realizations where I thought all I do is I help people to do something that I've done in the past. That's all I really do as a trainer, as a coach. It's helping them to achieve similar success to what I've achieved in the past. And actually, if you get down to real brass tacks, if you get down to what's important, the biggest change I've made, the biggest success I've had in my life, barring actually having that child and staying married to that amazing lady, the biggest thing I've done is get sober. So why would I not put that at the heart of my kind of message and use the skills that I've got to help share that joy? And my life's not perfect. I have good days and I have bad days, but in general I jump out of bed ready to do something. And I've got a lot of energy. I've got a lot of focus. I've got a lot of calm and a lot of peace in my life. And that's all come from stopping drinking. So why would I not want to share that with people? I think if I tried to hold on to that and keep it to myself, I'd be an idiot, wouldn't I? I'd be a horrible human being.
Yeah. What do you find is common misconceptions that you run into? I will tell you, and I don't think we talked about this when I visited with you, but I've never been a drinker. And so people are almost always, oh, I don't drink that much. It's almost, no, I don't drink. Oh, I don't drink that much. I'm not judging you. I'm just saying I choose not to drink. Do you find many misconceptions? Patterns of misconception about people that you see?
Oh, how long have you got? Yes, there are so many. If you look at the way alcohol is portrayed in the media and advertising, it's all an illusion. They are selling a lie. The idea that alcohol helps you to socialize, that it helps you deal with your stress, that it makes you better looking, that's all so ingrained. It's not simply in alcohol advertising, not simply in the way it's portrayed in films, television, streaming services, almost in the way we discuss it, the way we put the memes on social media. We are doing the work for them a lot of the time. We are advertising alcohol. And a lot of that comes from the fact that a lot of people sense that there's something not quite right with their drinking, and therefore they use a bit of bravado to try and justify it and rationalize it. So there's all of that. But I think the biggest misconception that I try quite hard to get to these days is understanding what moderation looks like. Because everybody's a big fan of moderation, aren't they? And they think, oh yeah, you've got to be moderate. If you're too extreme, it doesn't really work out for you. And what I get is that they look at me as being sober and they think that's too extreme. And then they look at me before I stop drinking and they probably say, oh, that's too extreme as well. And to be fair, drinking two bottles of wine a night is way too extreme. It's beyond extreme. But I think the mistake that most people make is they think that in between where I am now and where I used to be, in the middle of that is what moderation is. But actually, between sober and where I was, if you sit right directly in the middle of that, you'd be drinking one bottle of wine a night. And I think that's the thing that we need to realize as a society, that we all have this idea of what drinking too much is, and we all understand what sobriety is. But what we need to realize is that actually moderation is so much closer to sobriety than it is to drinking heavily. And actually, even 75% away from heavy drinking towards sobriety is still going to end up at what, 30, 35 units a week. And that is too much. In fact, I think even the government guidelines, which they refer to as the lowest risk level, which is true, it is a lower risk level. In terms of your long-term health, yes, the risk is quite low, but it still has an impact. So if you drink 14 units a week, you will be having a measurable impact on your focus, on your energy, on your joy of life. It affects the way your brain functions. It gets in the way of all of those fancy neurotransmitters that make life worth living. And honestly, if you think the juice is worth the squeeze, then do it. Don't let me stand in your way. But I wonder how much people drink on autopilot, and they drink because it's Friday, and they drink because they're watching Netflix, and they're not actually enjoying the drink. They're getting the downside, but they're not actually enjoying the drink.
And I connect to that from a food perspective. I've struggled with my weight my whole life. And there are you, when you go to a movie, you get popcorn and a soda, right? And now partly because this is sad, but when I was a child, my mom would say, you don't need popcorn and Coke. Going to the movie is treat enough. You don't need two treats. And of course, I'm like, then by damn, I'm getting popcorn and Coke watching a football match, be it European or US, right? We need to have snacks. Now, I know there's plenty of people that can't, that care, do not care to watch a sporting event without a tasty beverage. And I'm not judging them. What I'm saying is, as you talked about, that is a habit built in, right? That you have this nachos, or I'm going to do pizza, or whatever I'm going to do, because that's part of the thought. So much of our social interaction is we go out to eat, we meet people for drinks, we meet people for dinner. And I know there's some talks about having people over, and you won't feed them, you won't just socialize. And it just seems odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And you, like part of you could say, The American football season, it's what, 16 games. So you're a fan of the Dallas Cowboys. They might make 17 games. They're not
very much.
Have a very deep run into the playoffs, aren't they?
No, they're not right now. But thank you for noting that. Yeah.
But actually, when you get down to it, if you're a football fan, you're going to watch some football during the bye week. Anyway, you're going to watch the playoffs. You're going to watch the Super Bowl. So all of a sudden, you've drank every week for, what is it?
The 22 weeks. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So you're almost half a week.
It's a long time. And if you're drinking every week just simply because there's football, I would be quite surprised if you couldn't find an excuse to drink every week simply because it was the summer. There'd be a barbecue. Yeah. And I think that's the real danger, that you get into this kind of like idea that something is special. And I think that's something else we could do quite well to reassess our attitude to what a special occasion is. Because if you're having a special occasion once or twice a week, it's not special anymore, is it?
Right.
That's the whole point. And yes, celebration absolutely was connected with food and always has been. But that was when celebration was a rarity. So you would celebrate Easter and you would celebrate Christmas and you would celebrate your birthday and you'd celebrate the birthdays of the people in your family and possibly a few close friends. And that adds up to about 12 occasions a year. So you end up doing it about once a month and that makes it actually special.
Yeah.
But now you want to go to birthday cake ice cream. So you can eat birthday cake ice cream every day of the year and it loses all of its meaning and it's no longer just that big midwinter festival where we celebrate for maybe even 12 whole days. Now it's just this kind of, it's the middle of December. I'll use Christmas as an excuse.
Yes.
And that'll take me all the way through to, I've got into the habit now. So probably the end of January. And it just becomes this constant barrage. It's not like a special occasion at the end of December. It is a 3-month slog.
One of the things that you reminded me of, Penn Jillette from the Magic team, Penn and Teller, lost a whole lot of weight a few years ago, lost over 100 pounds. And his diet guru talked about rare and appropriate. He said, when you're going to quote unquote cheat or eat off the diet, it should be rare and it should be appropriate, right? And I think, and I do, the other thought I came up with is we were at a 4th of July family gathering and we were having fun and we were just joking and laughing and we started talking about different diets, right? And my sister-in-law, who is a dietitian, said that's a bad diet. If a diet tells you you can't eat a banana, that's a bad diet. And she said, so my other sister-in-law said, okay, Robin, what is a good diet? She goes, eat what you want in moderation and that will take care of it. And my sister-in-law goes, do we look like we believe in moderation? But that is one person's moderation is another person's. I remember Louis Grizzard, who is a Southern columnist, and he was going to have heart surgery, and he wanted, his doctor said, I know you're nervous. If you want to have one beer the night before you go in, fine. Could I have two? Okay, fine, two. And so Lewis said he got two empty 1-gallon tanks and went to the thing to get, because what is the serving size? Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think one of your purposes is to share that Real Men Quit, by the way, might be a good name of a book. and that there is a really good life with sobriety. So talk to me a little bit about that, Duncan. And then yes, let's promote the book.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the other big misconceptions that if you stop drinking, you are going to be boring. You are going to have no fun. You are not allowed to go to concerts. You're absolutely not allowed to go to concerts. And interestingly, I interviewed somebody on the podcast recently who has got into going to concerts sober. And we had a long conversation about how it's a different experience, how it is a much more enjoyable experience, how it's an experience that she can actually remember. And she was talking about all of these concerts that she's been to, paid loads of money to go, drank quite heavily in the run-up to them, drank quite heavily at the concert, and can't really remember it. And it's, that's quite a good point. If you do not remember what you did, you cannot tell me you enjoyed it. We're all about talking about how actually sobriety can be quite fun. You can still do the things that you enjoy. You do not have to stop doing things. You do not have to change your life completely, that you can still have fun. And now, honestly, there are so many amazing alcohol-free brands coming in. You don't even have to stop drinking beer. You can find some amazing alcohol-free beers. Just drink those. I try and get to the idea that it's not this kind of, you're not depriving yourself of something really special and enjoyable. What you're doing is you're removing something that is holding you back, that is stopping you become the kind of person that you want to do. Actually, ultimately, is getting in the way of you enjoying life.
So let's talk a little bit about the book. So you've actually, this is your second book, correct?
Technically it's my third book, but the first one was about local government and it's very dull. And you don't even have the same local government system in the US. So trust me, no one's interested in that one. But my second book. It's called Real Men Quit. And I've worked with quite a few guys and they don't have different problems to women. There is a lot of similarities in the way the problems express themselves, the impact they have on your life. It is all about the way it impacts your ability to perform, whether that's at work or in other areas of your life. It impacts on your relationships in the same way, it impacts on your health in the same way. But I think in the broadest terms, men approach drinking in a slightly different way. It's certainly sold to us in a different way. If you look at the way it's portrayed in the media, let's think about the manliest man you can think of. You're probably thinking about James Bond. And as soon as I say James Bond, you know what he drinks. You can picture it. You don't even need to be told. That's how effective that particular piece of advertising is. But if you look at James Bond, he's a tough guy. He's very dependable. He's solid. He punches the baddies in the nose. He's a tough guy. That's who he is. And then you look at the lady that's on his arm. She's going to be in an amazing cocktail dress. She'll be drinking as well, but she is very glamorous. And that's the way it's portrayed. Tough guys, glamorous ladies. So we identify with a different sort of set of stories around drinking, that actually, if we want to be a real man, if we want to be tough, then we've got to drink the beer. And no doubt there is a huge amount of alcohol sponsorship in sports. A lot of big alcohol companies put a lot of money into sponsoring the NFL. And the irony, of course, of that is, I know he is a bit of an acquired taste, but you can't argue with the fact that Tom Brady is the most successful American football player ever.
Yes.
And he doesn't drink. And that, I think, is the irony. More and more American football players are wising up to the fact that elite sporting performance does not involve alcohol. And even the ones that are drinking, they're controlling their consumption. They're drinking small amounts during the season. They might be going crazy in the off season, but when they're actually performing, they know that they've got to dial back the alcohol. So there's this irony in all of this advertising that the alcohol companies use the toughness, the dedication and the strength of American football players, but to get that toughness and that strength and that dedication, they don't drink alcohol. So there is this massive mismatch between the way it's portrayed and the reality of it. And incidentally, If you look at Daniel Craig, who played James Bond, his fitness regime when he was preparing for all of those films, very demanding in terms of the stunts and the physicality that he had to bring to the role. And if you remember that scene in Casino Royale when he walks out of the water in the swimming trunks, you don't get a six pack like that without putting in a bit of effort. Yeah. And he does drink alcohol. That's true. That she kind of famously talked about drinking alcohol. But when he was preparing for the roles, he massively cut his intake of alcohol so that he could get to his physical peak. And again, it's this mismatch that we're sold the martini, but the reality is that the guy playing Bond was massively cutting down his drinking.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, let's switch over to music. What are you listening now? What kind of music are you enjoying now?
So everybody says they have quite an eclectic taste in music, and maybe they do. I don't know. I listen to quite a wide range of stuff. I listen to a lot of folk music. Most of the live music I listen to is folk, simply because I do some folk dancing. I spend a lot of time around people who play folk music, and I spend a lot of time in that scene. I'm a big fan of British folk music, although there's some American stuff that I really like. The Dead South, I think, are fantastic. Okay. They're one of my favorite bands at the moment. I listen to a lot of hip hop, which really turned a different gear to folk music. I listen to a lot of rock, jazz, classical. Yeah, I do quite a wide range of stuff.
How did you get into folk dancing?
Partly it's because of the drinking. It's okay. One of those things that is very associated with alcohol. And I've lived in the same town my whole life. There's quite a tradition of dance that goes on here. And we can trace the dance style and the side that I dance for. We can trace our roots back to about 1560, which is, that's like when we discovered America.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So it's something that's been going on for a long time, and there's this great tradition. And I was walking out to get some lunch with a friend of mine ages and ages ago, and they were dancing, and I saw them, and I said to my friend, "Oh, we've got this great tradition of dancing in town. Maybe one day I'll start doing it." And we went and had some lunch, and then as we were walking back, they'd finished dancing, and one of my friends who dances with the side said, "Oh, Duncan, come over here." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, hi Tony, how's it going?" He said, "When are you going to start dancing?" And then of course my friend pipes up and said, "Oh, he's always wanted to do it," and like something like that, you can't really get out, right? Can you? A couple of weeks later, I was waving hankies around wearing a silly hat with flowers on it. But the reason why I think I quit it was because it traditionally happens in pubs, and traditionally there's a lot of drinking going on, and a lot of Morris dancers drink quite hard. And we would go out early in the morning, like literally someday, May morning in Oxford, the big thing. They would start drinking at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning kind of thing. So very heavy drinking environment. And when I stopped drinking, it was like, what am I going to do? Am I still going to enjoy drinking, dancing? And I thought, I'll go along because I like these people. I can't just leave all of a sudden. I ought to at least say goodbye. And to my surprise, it turns out I actually quite like the dancing. It actually turns out that there's so much more to it than the alcohol. I like the guys that I dance with. I like being a part of that tradition. I like the dancing. I like the places we go. I like the people that we meet, because there's so much to it to like. And what it turned out was that it was never really about the alcohol in the first place.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about this, and if we are, I apologize, but my latest music obsession is a guy named Jason Isbell, who does what they call Americana. And he was with the Drive-By Truckers. They fired him for his drinking. He has a documentary on Running With Your Eyes Closed that gets into how unproductive, how destructive his behavior was in drinking and drugs. And he talks about sobering up. And then his first album after he's sober is called Southeastern. It just hit its 10th anniversary. and it was his most successful album at ever. It catapulted him to a next range of fame. And since then, he's had great success in the albums. And I find it, that must be a reinforcement of, hey, you've chosen to be sober and you've been as creative as you've ever been and people loved it. Talk about reinforcing that perhaps you do not need that creative juice to help you get where you got to go.
Yeah, there is a massive amount of head junk around creativity and alcohol. And I, as a writer, I certainly grew up on the myth of Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald and things like that. And I believed that they were great writers because they drank. And actually, if you dig into the stories, F. Scott Fitzgerald, he died in his 40s, and that was completely drink-related. You've got to wonder what he would have gone on to write if he hadn't have died. And even if you think that maybe the misery of drinking would be worth the literary success, you've got to realize that F. Scott Fitzgerald had a terrible life. He was miserable the whole of his life. So, yeah, for me, that was the kind of connection with alcohol and creativity. And the reality, of course, is that those three books that I've published, I've done that in the last 8.5 years that I've been sober. I wrote the whole of my life before I got sober. I never really did anything with it. I never actually really completed anything. I never got to have the courage to put it out into the world because the alcohol was holding me back. For musicians, of course, it's even worse than that because wherever they go, people tend to drink. Their office is a bar. And think it's even worse than that, because if you think about it, how often do people go to gigs? Even people who are mad keen on music, they only go once or twice a week kind of thing. Right. So it's Friday night, it's a relaxation kind of thing. It's a special occasion. But if you're a musician, it's Tuesday, it's every day. And what happens to musicians, comedy performers as well, is that they spend all of their working life in these venues where people are drinking heavily, and it becomes associated with the job. And so they either learn to drink whilst they're performing, or they always go out drinking afterwards, and they tend to get into these very unhealthy patterns of behavior. I worked with a guy, it was a jazz drummer, and as it happens, it turns out that I'd seen him play ages and ages, 20 years ago. And he stuck in my mind because they were quite a good jazz band. So I was particularly impressed with the amount that he was able to drink and still play the drums. He was just like, he was drinking pints of beer like they were water. And he went through quite a few of them. And I remember turning around to the girl that I was with and saying, I'm very impressed with him because the amount he's drunk, I don't think I could walk, let alone play the drums. And yeah, lo and behold, 20 years later, he's absolutely the wrong end of an alcohol problem.
Yeah, and it's sad. And you hear so many stories of creative people that do have to find their sobriety. And it is, and luckily, there is a lot of more support among people. And I think one of the things you're doing is talking about that in a fresh and new way, is that this is, there is life after sobriety, and it's a fun life after sobriety, right?
Yeah, and there are so many examples of people who have just become infinitely more successful since they stopped drinking. And if you don't like those, Jeff Buckley, Amy Winehouse, there are a lot of examples of people who have cut short very promising careers. And we're not talking about you haven't been as successful as you should have been. We are talking about you are now dead. The irony of Jack Daniels, they use Jimi Hendrix and Kurt Cobain in their advertising. And it's, you know that story. Like, they both had incredibly high drug alcohol levels when they died. You know? They're like, Kurt Cobain was incredibly drunk when he shot himself. Yeah. And Jimi Hendrix, again, he'd been taking barbiturates as well, but he'd been drinking heavily the day he died in mysterious circumstances. And then the irony of it is we like then champion them as badges of rock and roll excess.
Yeah, it is sex, drug, and some rock and roll. And it's just, yeah, and it is that. Duncan, what's next for you? What do you want to do creatively next?
Yeah. So I interviewed you for my podcast, and that's part of a wider kind of program that we're into at the moment. I'm a bit obsessed with not getting sober, but what keeps people sober. And that's really the part of Flatpak Sober, is the idea of creating this kind of catalogue of tips, tricks, and tactics that can help people to stay sober and to design the kind of alcohol-free life that they want. We've interviewed about 35 people so far, and I want to keep going on that, and I want to really get enough interviews done so that we can start to look at what the similarities are, what the themes that keep coming up. Just without actually crunching any of the data, things do keep coming up around connection, not simply with other people, but connection with yourself. Self-awareness is a big package, and community is a big package. So things like that. And at some point, all of that kind of data is going to get fed into the mill. It's going to get crunched out. We're going to pull out the similarities. And then from that, I will probably write another book, which will be how to get from the day you stop drinking to the day you've created the life you want. And you can just sit back on the beach with a nice, nice glass of fizzy water and admire the sunset.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. This has been so much fun. I knew we would have a good time, and I'm so happy. All right, I'm going to let you plug your website and podcast in a minute. But in the meantime, I've got to ask you the Mary question. If you are a fan of Duncan's podcast and you're checking out, thank you. I really appreciate it. I end every podcast with a Mary question. Jay Armstrong, who is an honors English teacher, now retired in the Philadelphia area. And when he was teaching, he would give his students the lyrics to the Bruce Springsteen song, Thunder Road. They would read the lyrics. They would talk about it as if it was a poem. And then they would discuss the themes Bruce explores and the imagery Bruce portrays. And then he would ask his students at the end of the class, does Mary get in the car? Duncan, that is your question. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
Yeah, so I did mention earlier that I used to be in local government, which makes me a politician, which means I'm going to start by answering a completely different question. That idea of treating Springsteen's lyrics like poetry, I am all over that. That is massive. I think we venerate poets and we say, oh, look at these incredible intellectual people. Aren't they clever? And then we look down on Bruce because he's got a guitar in his hand. But he is first and foremost a fantastic writer. And I've spent a lot of time looking at his lyrics from the point of view of a writer because I want to improve my own craft. And it's things like that, you in a beauty, but hey, you're all right. Things like that line, I don't quite know why it works. It shouldn't be quite as appealing as it is. It's almost like this throwaway, but it's so beautifully crafted. And he's obviously spent an awful lot of work getting those throwaway lines to just really zing. So with all of that aside, yes, of course she gets in the car. If she didn't get in the car, we wouldn't be sat here today, would we? Because
there we go.
Yeah, because if you really think about it, Mary is not the washed up beauty queen that appears in lots and lots of Bruce's songs. Mary is us. He's not talking to her. He's talking to us. He's asking us if we want to get in the car. And if we hadn't have got in the car, then his career wouldn't have taken off. And you wouldn't have this podcast. You would have a podcast. You'd just be podcasting about something else because you're a massive show off.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But of course he gets in the car. We all got in the car. We all went down Thunder Road. And my God, what a road trip.
I love that answer. That is a great answer. All right, Duncan, if someone wants to hear more about your books, more about your podcast, just more about your work, what's the best way?
So the best thing to do is to put getover.uk into the internet. And that'll take you to a bit of my website. And from there, you can grab yourself a copy of my second first book called Get Over Indulgence. You can have a PDF or the Kindle version. There's also the audio version there. You can have that completely for free just because you obviously have great taste in podcasts. But that is actually also a section on my website, which is baskaranbrown.com. I am pretty easy to find if you can spell Baskaran, but most people can't. So put getover.uk into the internet. It'll take you to that part of my website. From there, you can find out everything about what I do. All of the socials are on there as well. I am pretty busy on social media, not just the podcast. We do a lot of videos and a lot of articles and a lot of stuff like that. Yeah, connect. If you've got any questions, I love talking about this kind of stuff. I do it all day. If you've got any questions, just connect and let's have a chat.
Sounds wonderful, my friend. We need to do this again. I have so much fun visiting with you. I will find another excuse to do that. Thank you for being part of this. And I think it's an important mission and that you're sharing. And so good job, my friend. All right, listeners, go ahead. Any final words?
Thank you. All I was going to say was thank you. It's been fun.
That's good. All right, listeners, go check out his website. Get the free download. Sign up for the mailing list. And I want you each to be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
There we go. Another episode. I'm about to go through a couple of things where you can reach me and give me feedback. So if you want to skip this, I understand, but I do hope you check it out every once in a while. I'm available on Twitter at Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is available at SetLustingBruce. You can send me an email, setlustingbruce@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail at 469-249-2442. I am currently doing a few other podcasts, Perfectly Good Podcast, John Hiatt from A to Z, where Sylvan Groth and I discuss every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My Babylon 5 podcast is Last Best Hope for Conversation, where Lou Karen and I discuss every episode of Babylon 5 in chronological order. I still am doing Next Stop Everywhere, the Doctor Who podcast with my brother in time, Charles Skaggs. And then finally, How Many Podcasts, the only podcast on the internet that counts, where my buddies and I discuss pop culture. You can go to our Patreon page and support the podcast for as little as $1 a month. You can go to our Facebook page, like, and please, please go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and leave a 5-star rating and review for all of the podcasts that I'm doing. It's okay if you don't listen to them, but if you subscribe and rate, it really will make my day better. Thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
You just heard the fun-talking, hard-rocking, music-loving, album-ranking, fan-thinking, joy-spreading, lyric-reading, story-sharing podcast that is the one, the only, Set Listing Bruce. The theme for Set Listing Bruce was written by David Rosen, used by permission.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.